Sorry, that was supposed to, the last 15 minutes was supposed to be interactive, but we actually started 15 minutes behind there. So, I'm going to interact with you. So why don't we start from a place of questions, and then we'll jump into that. So what questions do you have from what I, or thoughts on your mind, or relevant, or irrelevant, or you're crazy? Yes, sir.
I'm crazy.
Welcome to the club.
The question relates to governance.
Yes.
So we have a John Carver governance. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
Noses in, fingers out.
Noses in, fingers out. Okay. So you're in, but you're, yeah.
A lot of nonprofits have gone to this approach to governance, and it's delegation of authority.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just wonder if you're familiar with it, because the way that you talk in terms of committees and so on is a much different approach than the John Carver model.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So let me just say this. There are governance responsibilities, right? That there are certain parts that just committees that have to be there, right? And they can operate like they have to operate. And by the way, I think so. Like, you run into trustees or volunteers, board people who are like, you know, hey, I'm a finance person, but I don't want to be on the finance committee. Right? I want to do something different. I want to grow. I want to develop. And I want to do that for them. But I need you to be awesome at this. Right? Don't waste your talents. Don't bury that one talent so you can go off and do other things. I need you to multiply that. I need tenfold out of you. And I think you can create everything that I talked about, the roles, the feeling of being utilized, being engaged inside of those committees too. So I don't want to say that, I don't want to diminish those, right? Because an organization can't run, it can't meet its fiduciary responsibility, its governance responsibilities if you don't do that. But even inside of them, we could take engagement up. We could feel like people are utilized, you know, totally utilized. And, you know, one of the things with, I don't know how it is with your trustees, but a lot of nonprofits, large, small and large, end up with a lot of people who are in professional services, right? They're lawyers, they're consultants, they're wealth managers, they're, you know, and they don't have a depth of operating experience. So I talk to operating experienced people and I say, look, I need you on the finance committee. I need you on the operating committee because you play a role. You are the mentor and teacher to people who don't really run a P&L every day. In fact, I hate that. Anybody a wealth manager before I say what I'm going to say? You know, there are wealth managers who've never run a P&L, right? They look at your financial statement, and they run your financial statement from an investment portfolio, but they don't understand how an organization runs. And so I'm not familiar with the model, but I'm not trying to diminish governance.
I was actually just asking for a translation.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. Yes.
I'm interested in exploring the idea of roles a little bit further.
Yeah.
I love what you said about each board member probably knows it.
Yeah.
But how do we as an organization affirm it and put the picture together where you really have those roles in balance as well?
Yeah, and we will definitely go into that a little bit around that, but let me talk about it. So there are things that you know you need people to know more about than anybody else, and you would like them to play that role. So, for example, student life. Student life. Unless you dig deep into it, you read about it, you walk the thought, but you don't know it. It's been a long time since most of us have been. There's some younger, but a long time since I've been a student. But what if there's two or three trustees, their role is to really be in touch with student life, which means they eat on campus. They go to different events. They give their extra time to go do that. And when we want to talk about what's going on in student life, when they raise their hands, they have credibility. That could be their role. Right? It could be something in academics. It could be, do you have Greek system? You don't have Greek systems. No. Some faith-based places do actually have Greek systems. But you have something that relates to a fraternal or a sorority type of organization, or everybody just lives. Okay. So, but that is something that, you know, normal instance, not normal, typical, that's a better word, typical institutions. And you know what? That's a really important thing right now. You know, residential life is somewhat different than student life, if you will. You know, the student experience, but residential life is something different, you know. So I think there's a bunch of different things that we can give them roles. You know, the brand. How's the brand perceived? You know, and that's my role. My role is to understand how the brand is perceived because I'm a marketing expert. And so I've been given that role. So I'm constantly looking from the outside in and can come back. And when we talk about marketing, I can raise my hand and say, well, let me tell you how the... Here's my perception of the brand because that's what I do. I go and ask. Does that help? Okay. Yes, ma'am.
So if you'll just keep going in that kind of category, because I think we've gotten more familiar with the Carver model because we didn't want our boards interfering with employment issues and micromanaging staff that the CEO is supposed to be doing, and then the whole
right.
role.
So you're not
about staying healthy.
Yeah, so this doesn't turn you into an operational board. It doesn't turn you into an operational board because you're not directing anybody. You're pulling. You're knowledgeable. You're deeper into an area. I know. I know people turn into wanting to operate. Right, because when we do bring people onto the board who are used to doing things and leading things and doing like that, first thing they want to do is roll up the sleeve. Then they want to do. We don't want that. So, I think we're talking about governance, trusteeship, fundraising, contributions, not running the organization. Your job to run the organization and your team, but that doesn't mean the board can't be there as a mentor or a coach. Or a resource, someone that they can access to help when called upon, not when they call upon them. Yeah. Right? Now, it takes maturity. So I'm not saying that, I told you at the beginning, don't go home and just do all this, because you'll fail, because one size fits one. There's certain trustees that have the maturity to understand that when talked to, and there's others, you can talk to them and they're still going to go do the wrong thing. But I want to get at the idea that we can find roles, and that's part of what our jobs are, to say, okay, I can't let Rusty do that because Rusty tells them what to do, and that's against my model. So I should put Rusty in another place. So maybe he's doing more external things instead of internal things. So that's all part of the jigsaw. That's all part of the puzzle. All part of the puzzle. So now I think I get it. The Carver model is it's not operational. Like little nonprofits, right? You start with everybody, you paint the scenes, you make the signs, you do all that. And then one day the organization grows up and all those people they're like, well, when do I get to come paint the signs? You go, no, you don't do that anymore. They don't know what to do. They go off to another little nonprofit because they can't sit there from a governance perspective.
So it sounds like if it's noses in, fingers out.
Yeah.
That what you're recommending is that we designate or help people to discover ways of strengthening their olfactory capacity.
Exactly.
They get
sharper noses
in particular areas.
You should run a university.
I will.
You will.
I'm going to go home and do that.
Go home and do that.
I don't know why I didn't think of that sooner.
Yeah, exactly. So we're strengthening their olfactory.
Great.
You know? And we're giving them, and we're, because they can't, we're lifting up the aroma to them, right? Giving them a way to, right? I got a buddy that everybody else can drink wine, like this guy goes, like it's going to come up, because he can't smell that well. So we have to help them. We have to help them, you know? And that's why I love this idea of transparency into the organization, that they can see in. That's why I talked about that board book process, because there's transparency and they can go back and forth. And, you know, here's the other interesting thing I found is you need boards really, really well informed and very well integrated and engaged for the bad times. Right? In the good times, you can skim the surface. Everything's good. But when the proverbial stuff hits the fan, you know, everybody jumps to the corners. They start to go into this. They don't know. They're afraid to say. You know, they have opinions that aren't informed, and everything starts going crazy. And you go, what happened? And you roll back and you go, well, no wonder. Right? Their noses weren't in. Right? And they don't know each other. We've not engaged as a team. We've been a bunch of silos and individuals, and half of them weren't really engaged in the first place. So, you know, where are they? They're in the back alley. They're in the back alley when I need them in here. So I think it's a little bit of risk management, too. It's a little bit of risk management. What are the questions from this morning before we go a little deeper here? Any places where you thought I was just like off base? Because, you know, this is actually, I don't go do this. This is when Russ asked me to come and speak. I'm like, well, what do I have to bring? You know, I mean, I'm not like a guy that runs around on the circuit. You know, I get Christianity Today. Anybody get Christianity Today? You know, and you see, you open up the page and there's the seven lines of all the people who are all speaking. And I'm like, yeah, that's not me. You know, so I speak more to companies and executives. So this is an interesting one for me. So where am I off base?
Well, I'm curious about the governance committee. What you said today is where we live, and it was really going on.
Good.
Just lots of practical things to take back.
Good. Good. Good, good, good. Okay, you want to make a jigsaw puzzle?
Yeah.
You know, you actually can make a jigsaw puzzle. It's not just... Okay, so we're going to try to kind of do this as an exercise. So you've got to get a piece of paper in front of you. You've got to work off of this. And I know, look, some are trustees, some are chair of the trustees, some are board, on different committees. But let's all act like we run our board, because those who teach learn twice. So if you get this, then you'll learn again. So what we want to try to do is get to the one thing, the piece that we each can bring. So the first thing you need to know is how many pieces do you have? So how many trustees do you have? So you got to get, that's the first thing, because that's the size of your puzzle. Now, you can expand your puzzle, if you'd like, to your senior staff, to ad hoc committees, like Purdue's got with the Champions Committee. Could certainly expand the number of pieces to the puzzle. But for sure, every trustee has to have their own piece. And I would encourage you, I was having a conversation, is he in here with me from Canada? No. Yeah, you're from Canada, but I was having your chairman?
No.
Oh, no, maybe it was the Indiana Wesleyan. Yes. Your president came up to me afterwards, and we were talking, and I said, do you have a champions committee? He goes, no, we used to have something called PACE or something, the presidential or something. And I said, I would really encourage you to get this champions committee. They're not your trustees, but they're these people, because they're the ones that can really coach and advise you and encourage you. And best of all, you don't work for them. So you can be honest with them. You know, like I said, you know, your job is hard. It's also lonely. Like when I was a CEO, I mean, it's a really lonely, lonely, lonely job, because everybody's expecting you to know exactly what to do. And you don't have anybody to shut the door with and go, you know what, I don't have any idea. I don't know. Herman Lay, who ran the Lay's Potato Chips, he hired this guy, John Ewing, back in 1948 or 49, right after World War II. He hired him as a personnel specialist. And he brought him in and he said, you know, he goes, She goes, Mr. Ewing, and John was a young guy just coming out of the military, but Herman Lay was older, but he called everybody Mr. He said, Mr. Ewing, I need you. He goes, yeah, what do you want me to do? He goes, well, I got the same trucks, I got the same ingredients, I got the same, you know, everything, materials, same process, so I need you to get me better people. So that'd be my competitive advantage, better people, but that's not really what I need you for. What I need you for is to shut the door and for me to be able to talk to somebody who doesn't want my job and who is going to be bluntly honest with me, because I don't have anybody. He goes, there are weeks I don't know we're going to make payroll on Friday. And he says, you know, you just don't tell people you're not going to make payroll on Friday. They kind of freak out. And I just need somebody like that. And that was John's job. And I think leaders, we all need that. So a champions committee, a group. So I would say expand the number of jigsaw pieces that you need, but you start with your number of trustees. Oh, this is sick. Let's do this. And then you have to go to your strategy. I thought it was, so I went and looked at Indiana Wesleyan's strategy and online, and you know, they've got 12 elements. They've got the four things and then three underneath each one of them. They're pretty clear. So you could start there. You could build there. You could say, just in those 12 things, I could begin to create my picture of what it is that I need and what pieces do I need to make that happen. That's pretty clear. I don't think that that's all of the picture, though, because there are operational things that you need. Governance, right? You've got to have that. And in fact, I think about it this way. If I'm putting together a nice, pretty puzzle top, that would be a pretty puzzle top, wouldn't it? Be a hard puzzle. 1,000 pieces. Be a nice thing to all do together. But what does this represent? Well, it represents land, terra firma. To me, that is those governance things, those responsibilities that we have, that we must deliver on, that are part of our mission, that we just can't. So academic excellence, financial responsibility, you know, integrity as it comes to those kinds of things, trustworthy student life. That's ground. It's part of the picture. It's part of the picture. Who's the best at that? Who could give us the best in those areas where if I give them this little piece right over here, they go, yeah, I can deliver on that. I can deliver on it. Now, the river could well be a bunch of things that are moving. All the stuff that's moving, that constantly changes. And there are some people who are better at those things that have ambiguity that other people are not good at. So that could be student life. That could be residential life. That could be, you know, athletics. That could be things, that could be fundraising. Even though fundraising is sort of terra firma in my mind, but it could be that, because let me tell you, the model in fundraising is changing. Like, I am doing my best to try to convince, and maybe you all, somebody in here would be the first ones to do it, to convince higher education to adopt the political fundraising model. That doesn't mean you get spammed 1,000 emails a day. That's not what I'm saying. Or a bunch of phone calls. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the peer-to-peer model. So here's how it works in a political campaign, a presidential campaign. You sit there, you're a National Finance Committee. There'll be 200 or 300 people sitting in a room. And there will be a CEO of a company. Like I said, there are billionaires sitting next to a school teacher or a laborer. They'll be sitting there. And I've been in the meetings where they recognize and they say, stand up, those of you who've raised over, you know, $500,000. And the CEO sits there. CEO wrote a check to the max. That's why they're in the room. And the school teacher stands up and the laborer stands up. Anybody who's raised over $1 million, stay standing. And the school teacher stays standing. And you go, a school teacher has raised $1 million? That's amazing. That's awesome. How did she have time or he have time to go do that? We gave him the tools. We gave him a menu. We gave him tools. We gave him all the things that they needed. And then they went out and they just did it. Higher education kind of runs this way. You have a development and advancement team. Those development officers are typically siloed into different departments or colleges or parts of the university. They work their alumni. They work all of those different things to keep funding going. And then all of those people who are out there who care about the institution, we don't give them a way to go raise money for us. Unless I'm wrong. Does anybody have... anybody use that model? At Purdue, we have 450,000 living alumni. University of Rhode Island has 50,000 living alumni, of which most live in the state of Rhode Island. And they don't tap them. They don't tap them to go get money. And I'm like, whoa. So let's put that as part of the river. It's changing. You know, and who might be best is on your board of trustees to go and lead the thinking, maybe not the doing, because the advancement team, the development team does the doing, but to stir the thinking, to bring them and go, hey, did you ever think about this? Hey, I've been looking at that. Hey, here's some cool technology that's out there that other nonprofits and political campaigns and other things are using. Could we ever think about doing something like that? I just want to give it to you as a consideration. Up the level of thinking. So there are things that are flowing, that are changing right underneath us, that there might be better trustees to work on than others. And then we've got the cloud in the sky, which to me is the future. And who is looking at the future and getting as deep as they can into what's going on with the future? And what are the patterns from outside that are coming? So I really, poor Lake Lambert from Hanover College, I think he was sorry he had lunch with me, because at the end of it, he goes, oh, I'm exhausted. I tend to do that to people. But I also try to encourage him, right? You know, be encouraging. But we were talking about readying students for work. And I said, you're always 4 years behind. You're always 4 years behind. I mean, the world is moving so fast, by the time they show up, we have to turn around and reteach them, right? Because they're not using Slack on campus. They're not using the cutting edge, you know, different kinds of technologies on campus. And then they show up, and they don't even, first of all, they don't really know how to work. They have a degree. And so I said, you know, you're always 4 years behind. He goes, yeah, I know, it's killing us because, you know, we try, we write these case studies. And I say, well, it's because you got the wrong people writing the case studies. He goes, what do you mean? And I said, I'm guessing your faculty writes your case studies, right? And he goes, yeah. I said, well, they're the wrong people to write the case studies. He goes, well, who should be writing them? I said, freshmen. You're freshmen. That should be one of their required things when they come in. Is they should write a case study about what's going on in the world, what they see in multiple different areas. And then they carry that case study with them for the next 3 years, constantly refining it, constantly developing. And then they hand it off to the next freshman's coming. So that it's constantly... And I said, that's how you have case studies of things that are really happening. I came out of video games and Electronic Arts. Talking about something that moves so fast you can't keep up. Right? I mean, We've gone from a piece of hardware to a thing that's in the cloud. You know, in my time, we've gone from one person being able to play to now people playing all over the world and thousands of people going to a place to watch other people play. I'm like, that's crazy. Who would ever thought that would have happened? I saw it, though. I saw it 8 years ago in my Sunday school class. So I teach first through sixth grade at my church in San Francisco. And, you know, much like a lot of different churches now, we have an hour-long service, and the first 20 minutes is worship. And after a while, people figure that out, and they wander in, right? I don't know what kind of churches you go to, but they wander in. And because they know that nothing really happens other than worship, and, you know, so they just find their way. And so, consequently, in the children's ministry, that's a problem. Because you can't start right in the hour because the kids are all wandering in. So we have to give a 10-minute to 15-minute grace period. So instead of an hour, they get really 45 minutes of service, and which is what mom and dad are getting, you know. So, okay. So what do we do with those first 15 minutes? Well, we've got all kinds of different games and things that they're playing, and we've got, you know, this is San Francisco. You have to be innovative. So we've got big screen TVs, and kids are playing games and stuff like that. And it used to be 8 years ago, prior, my first 15 minutes was, Kim, let him play. Jeff, let Joy play. Time for you to give up the controller. Let somebody else to play. And it was like, that's what it was. It was like just a constant, you know, it's like, I hated it. And then something changed. Just changed. Nobody did anything. Nothing ever changed. Nothing changed. But all of a sudden the kids would be playing and they would hand the controller over to somebody else. And they would watch. And then so-and-so would walk in and everybody would stop and they'd give her the controller. And she'd play and everybody would come around and watch. And I said, you know, this thing called esports, this thing called stadium gaming is coming. Now, I wasn't smart enough at that point to go, you know what, I should go invest in this tomorrow. But I saw it coming. You know, somebody's got to be watching for those things. Somebody's got to be saying, what are the patterns that we see coming up? What's a freshman? What's a college junior? What's a high school sophomore? What's an eighth grader thinking? I'm founding a new company, co-founding a new company that's in the talent space only for biotech. And they came and they found me because biotech's going to run out of talent, believe it or not. You wouldn't think so. You'd think biotech. Oh, everybody wants to be in biotech. Well, if you look at our education system and the number of kids who our education system is not giving hardcore science to, right? We talk about STEM education all the time at the higher education and high schools. You know, it's a very small percentage of schools in the country that are really giving STEM education. So science. And when they do STEM education, it's technology and engineering. The hard sciences are being left behind. So that's happening. We're not growing as a population. So we're the same 300 million people we've been at. So there's not going to be as many people coming through the pipeline, which you know in higher education, it's going to go like this. And when you stop and you can't bring immigration problems and all these kinds of things, and you can't bring people in, H-1Bs, which have PhDs from other places, or they don't come to the United States and get their PhD and get to stay, then you don't have enough talent. And they see it. They can see it. They're looking at it and going, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's a train. It really is a problem. So the guy goes and does a bunch of research and says, what other industries had this problem? And they said, video games had that problem. They had that problem at one time. How'd they fix it? And it got... They research back, and they called me. They said, hey, you were the guy at Electronic Arts that gave $8 million to the University of Southern California to create a game development program when there were no game development programs. Why did you do that? I said, because there were no game development programs, because we didn't have a pipeline. We knew it. We were going to run out of talent. We were starting to go offshore, and we didn't want to do that. And now there are, last count, I think like 175 different game development programs across the country. And the reason being is because all it took is one flag to be thing, and every game development computer science person ran to their provost and said, see, there's a future. See, we need to do that. So now the biotech industry has got that same problem. And so they're trying to figure out, how do we go all the way back to the eighth grade? And biotech companies start to support kids who care about science. I think that's what we have to do in higher education. We got to go all the way that far back, and somebody's got to watch it. So that's a jigsaw puzzle piece. That's the future. That's the cloud. That's the blue sky. And there are certain people who are really great at that, and there are certain people that you just don't want to even think about it, right? They can't think that big. It's okay. That's okay. But there are certain people who are big dreamers, and you can let them go. And if you don't, you should at least have one fit that piece. You know, especially if you got strategy that has innovation in it. So I mentioned to you this idea of an ideal board. I wonder if you're going to be able to see this. Probably not. Oh yeah, the whole resolution thing changed here when we did this today. But I'll email it to you. And if you ask me for it, or I'll have Russ make sure we send it. So the point is that, like, you come up with different backgrounds. So you say, look, my board is, you know, 50 people, and I am chartered for 50. And I've got to give, you know, I actually have to have so much money. By the way, that is a piece in the jigsaw puzzle, right? That there's somebody in the trustees or multiple members of the trustees who have that piece to work with development and advancement to make sure that we can pay the bills. Right? They may be people who write big checks, and they may be people who are the best at networking to go make that happen. So there is that piece of it. And then you have, you know, different areas of expertise. So for that terra firma, that land, you do need people who have operational experience. You do need someone or multiple people who have run organizations to help you with that, to help you think with that, to do that. And if you've got those, that's great. If you don't, you got to go find them. You got ex-CEO, current CEO, ex-CFO, current CFO, ex-COO, current COO, people who can do that. And then you'd go through the entire skill set, because like I said, you need that experience skill set should match up with your senior team so that you've got both. Again, not to tell them what to do, but to coach and to mentor them. And then you need them, you know, people who have different passions. And I think you can get down underneath the different passions. Like, you have people who have passion around engineering. They may be engineers, but they may not. They have passion. The arts. The humanities. You know, are you finding those people inside of your trustees in your group who can play that piece? So you come up with your ideal board. You go through and you say, this is ideally what I want. And then you put people in each one of the charges. You say, what's my percentage? If my board is 15 people or 20 people, you know, 20 people, I got 0 out of 20. I got 2 out of 20. I got 10 out of 20. And then I balance it. And then you push it out, like I said, 3 or 5 years. You go, I got to get to that goal. I got to get to that goal. And then you move. So the point is you drive your ideal board off of strategy, and then you go and you work that background. Are there backgrounds until you can bring it forward? What I think would be good is to stop here and write down the three most important strategic elements that you have for your institution. And hopefully everybody can do it really quickly. What are the three strategic priorities? I could do this like an altar call and have you close your eyes and lower your heads and never see each other when I ask this next question. But who was able to do this easily? 1, 2, 3, 4. Who is it sort of hard for? 1, 2, 3. Who's still working on them? Come on now. Still working on them? Couldn't get to it, but still working on them? There's a lesson in this, right? Like, if it's not rolling off of our tips of our tongue, you know, if we don't get it, how does anybody else get it? Now, what you can do now is, who on your board, who in your trustees, can you put their names next to those three things? That's their piece. I'm going to give them that piece. We'll define what that is, by the way. We'll come back to it and say, what is it that you deliver? But, you know, what piece? Easy for you? Do you have people? Perfect. Who doesn't have people? Yeah, you're giving me this? Yeah? Who doesn't have, when you think about your trustees, who's got an empty piece there? Anybody? Come on. You do?
We do, yeah. In academics.
Academics.
because we're a Bible college and we're not trying to be something else.
Yeah.
But we're trying to be a Bible college like tomorrow's Bible college needs to be. And so bringing in typical academics would be taking us in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, that's, so you need somebody, you know, you need people that trust you.
Yeah, futurist academic.
Futurist academic.
I don't know where, you look under F in the yellow?
As you Google future academic. I probably would start at the bookstore. I'd look at the people who are writing books and talk about it. But I tell you what, that's a compelling role. You've got the beginning of something there. I'm looking for a futurist academic in biblical study and biblical application. That sounds pretty cool. So you got the beginning of something there, you know, that I think, you know, so it's one of the things at Purdue we've been also challenged with, because we do now talk about how liberal arts can multiply, but it's hard to be a liberal arts college inside of a big STEM university and get any attention unless you integrate. And David Reingold, Dean Reingold, I give him a lot of credit because he's sort of taken this idea of the intersection of the liberal arts, which is going to make sense here maybe for you in a second, the biblical studies, but and he's starting to create these cool courses like Purdue is the cradle of astronauts, right? Neil Armstrong, Gus Grissom, you know, go on and on and on. Quarterbacks and astronauts. We just keep falling back on those two things, right?
They both launch things.
That's right. So now he's created a new course in the sociology department, The Ethics of Mars. What are the ethical implications of sending a person to another planet that may not come back, even when they say they want to, or colonizing and sending a colony where they're going to be out there? I mean, what are the? It sounds kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of like a course I would want to go to. And guess who wants to go to those? The people who are over in aeronautical and science and space. They think that's really cool. Because they're doing, so he's starting to align those kind of things. So I sit there and I think about, you know, what is the biblical things that we can learn about the future? And I love to read the Bible. That's my discipline. You know, I mean, we all have our spiritual disciplines. My default is I read the Bible. So every even year I read it all the way through, from start to, so I just finished in 2018, and then in the odd year I read the New Testament all the way through. Which, funny story, I have a very good Jewish friend who just sent me a book, a thing he loves to read. He goes, hey, you read a lot. Did you read any good fiction in 2018 that I could read? And I said, not fiction for me, but for you, you could pick up the New Testament. he thought that was funny. You know, I go back to that, and so I write this this blog every day called Purposed Working, and it's just it's a short little blog that I started in October 1st, 2008, which I still write to this day, Monday through Friday, not on work holidays because it's all based on work, and it's the idea of the intersection between faith and work. And the first paragraph is something that's going on in the work world, and the second paragraph, it starts with a biblical verse, then it's got a little thing about what's going on in the world around work, and then it's got a second paragraph, which is the biblical application of that. And I have a whole bunch of people who read just the first paragraph and they leave. I'm fine with that. It's cool. I mean, they had to avert their eyes past the verse, right, to do it. That's okay. They read. But every now and then they scroll down, and they pick up that other side. So it's my little bit of out there evangelism kind of thing. But, you know, the biblical applications of the future and how we think about the future and the stuff that's showing up. I mean, Salesforce just hired Mark Benioff, who's a fantastic human being. But I know him, but I don't know him well enough to go, Mark, are you a closeted believer? Because he quotes scripture a lot, and he's... He's high integrity, cares about a lot of different things, and he's a really cool guy. He just hired a chief ethicist and human use officer to report to him. Because the unintended consequences of technology. Because there's the unintended... Nobody thought that Facebook was going to do what it's done to us. Who could have imagined that it would have... It was, the idea was to bring us all up here. We all could share. How did we know that it was going to make a corner over here and a corner over there? I mean, who would have thought that? Somebody's got to be watching those unintended consequences. The great thing about Slack that I talk about this morning is it's so great as a tool, but it's also so great as a tool that two people sitting next to each other will Slack each other instead of talk, because everything can get captured. And it's like we don't forget. So the unintended consequences in the Bible is the perfect thing for us to anticipate the unintended consequences of the future. You know? So you're right. You need a futurist. You need a futurist. So if I go back, if you don't have pieces, people, so you want to go get people, right? You want to continue to peel back that structure until each person can get their piece, and then you can give them measurable things around that piece. So I advise a bunch of companies, and I do this to every year. I say, give me my one piece, my one thing that you need me to do. Because I can't do more than one. Don't ask me to do more than one. I feel like you're overutilizing me if you ask me to do more than one. I just want to do one thing really, really well for you. The thing that makes you happy, that takes the strategy and moves it forward. And at the end of it, if I do it, I can go, hey, I did my job. I feel engaged. I feel well utilized. So this one company last year said, hey, I'm gonna really step out. I need you to make 38 sales introductions for me. People would you know in your neck, need 38. And I stopped and I said, David, that's a lot. You know, it takes me a bunch of time to go do this and stuff like that. He goes, I said, how did you come to 38? He goes, because I have an algorithm. And I have all my advisors, if each one of them does it, he had done what I'm talking about, divided everything up and said, if each one of you do 38, that gives me the number I need at the top of the pipeline, and I know what my... He goes, I can meet my revenue goals next year if each one of you give me 38 this year. So I'm like, dude, that is perfect. You told me what you needed. You told me why you needed it. You gave me a time frame that I need to do it in, and you gave me the number of times I need to do it in that one thing. And I can do that. I did it on December 30th. But it did it. And it did happen on December 30th. He said, by the end of the year. And you know what? He was really happy. He didn't bother with it. He didn't come back and say, have you started yet? Or when are you doing? Because I committed to him. I delivered 38. Boom. And now he's got his pipeline. So we have to put measurements on these things. It can't be just, I want you to be the futurist. Yeah. Well, what's that mean? You know, Steve, I'm a futurist. What am I supposed to do as a futurist, you know? Well, I mean, I want you to go out and I want you to go spend your time and go to that conference. I can't go. We shouldn't send other people. But, you know, that conference is one that I would go to if I could. But you could go. You go to that conference. You come back. You tell us what you learned. You share that with everybody else. Then I need you to read this book. And these are the things I knew. Inside of being the futurist, that's it. That's your one thing. Boom, you're done for the year. He'll feel good about it. She'll feel good about it. You'll feel good about it. You know, and then all of a sudden you have your futurist. But it takes work. I mean, this idea of making a jigsaw puzzle, you know, I think we think it's just like, oh, it's really easy. I mean, we could spend the next 3 days, right, just doing this. And you know what? You should. I won't be there with you. But you should. Because once you do, you've got it. You've got it. And I would even say, I'm going to stop talking, let you talk, you know. Go out and make one. I mean, literally make one. Steve, you should go out and go to Shutterfly. You can make jigsaw puzzles on Shutterfly. And take your strategy and put it into little circles and things that you need and cut a jigsaw puzzle. And then sit down with your trustees and say, here's the strategic plan that we know we have. Here's the plan that we have for this year. Each one of you are so important. I want to utilize you and engage you in the right way. And maybe you've had some conversations with them ahead of time, or you know, and you sit down in that board meeting, and they're all the pieces are all together, and everybody stands over the top of them, and they look at it, and they go, okay, there's Rusty's piece, and I get my piece, and I take it. And then at the end of the year, we all bring our pieces back. I will guarantee you, unless someone's sick or they die, every piece will be on that board. I guarantee it to you. Because that's engagement. That's utilization. That's making me feel like I got something that I bring to the table. What can I bring? You bring your piece back. Bring your piece back. Then we got it. Does that make sense? It's hard. Simple, but hard. Anybody in here who's a trustee that if we're given the pieces, you would turn it down? Would you turn it down? If it didn't fit you, right. So you got to have this conversation ahead of time, right? But if it fit you, would you turn it down? No. And I'm not going to ask how many people want more than one piece. Because I'm not asking you to sign up for more than one piece. You know, I ask you to sign up for more than one piece, you go, you know. I mean, here's how it goes in my life. So I'm sitting there, I've got a role, like I'm the theater board I was telling you about, the American Conservatory Theater. So I was on the board 10 years, president the last 3 years, retired off of the board so I could go do the Kennedy Center thing because I was appointed there. And then when my appointment ran out, I said, okay, I'm going to come back to the theater board. And, you know, it's kind of hard, you know, because once you've run something, it's kind of hard. It's like going back to high school, you know. Now I'm not just running everything. And so you have to keep your mouth shut and say, well, we used to do, oh, we've tried that before. You can't be that person. But they came to me and said, would you run the strategic plan process? Well, if I stop and think about it, I'm the person, right? I've run the board before. I was a part of the strategic plan. I stepped away. I've got an outside worldview. I've got all that. I said, Bets, that makes sense to me. That's my piece. I can do that. 6 weeks later, executive director calls up and says, hey, could you... You think you and Patty would want to co-chair the gala? And I said, I don't remember that being in my piece. No, we're not going to co-chair the gala. I got a strategic plan to go do. Gives me as a trustee, as a board member, an also a way to say no. When we encroach, which we do, right? And as leaders, we always encroach. We always want a little bit more. So I want you to be jigsaw puzzle makers. I want you to be the best jigsaw puzzle maker. And I want you to then take that and pass that on to others. So, any questions before we break? Okay, so the email is Rusty, R-U-S-T-Y, at my last name, which is R-U-E-F-F, F as in Frank, rusty@roof.com. In 1994, I went and got my last name's domain because it felt like maybe the future I'd want that. So nobody else has it but Patty and I. So rusty@roof.com. And if you will, you want any of this stuff, I'll send it to you. I'll send you all the presentations. You can have everything. And but just put in the subject line, you know, we met at the conference, so that it doesn't run to spam. And if it takes me a couple days to get it back to you, it might take a couple days, but I will. I will definitely give it to you. My wife said, Why are they going to Florida for this conference? It's a long way. And I said, well, you know, probably it's the Midwest or it's the Northeast. It's, you know, they're trying to get out of the weather. My wife's funny. She goes, nah, it's not it. Higher education people like to go where they're higher degrees. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Bless you all. Yes, sir. Oh, it's Purposed Working. P-U-R-P-O-S-E-D working and .com. And it's a small, so you know, it's W-O-R small letters, capital K-I-N-G. Purposed Working. And you can just Google me. Just Google me. You'll find it. It'll pop right up. So have a great rest of your conference. Thank you so much for having me. All right. Thank you.